Good morning.
It is wonderful to be with you this morning. We've wanted to come back to this church for many years. The church has supported us, loved us, prayed for us, I know. And we certainly do appreciate it, and we're glad for the opportunity this morning to share a little bit about what God has been doing with us these past few years that we haven't been here. So we have a lot of catching up to do. I think there's probably a lot of you that have no clue who we are, so, and that's okay. So I'm going to actually start far back and give you a little testimony about our lives and where we came from and how we got to where we're going, where we are now, and my husband will finish it up. So I get to talk like a mom and a grandma and a, you know, just have fun up here. So. So I really, once again, want to say thank you to our Pastor Aaron and Jenny, who hosted us last night and treated us royally and took us to the Bourbon Street Pizza Place, and it was just great. We had the breadsticks are amazing. So we had a great time there and enjoyed visiting with them and getting to know them, and what a great pastor you have and wife. So we are very thankful that we got to meet them and share with them. So we all have stories. Each of our lives is just full of stories and how God has brought us to where we are at this point in our lives. And I love to hear people's stories, so I'm going to just tell a little bit about our story this morning and catch you up on what we've been doing. But I'm going to start way back. There was a farmer in Ohio that went out into his cornfield to shuck corn. Now, that's speaking way back because some people don't even know what shucking corn is anymore, right? So it's been a while ago. But God, he'd been to a missionary service the night before, and the missionary talked about the need of missionaries in Honduras, Central America. And he was a farmer, and he loved young people. And so when he went out to shuck his corn, God spoke to him and called him to the mission field to go to Honduras. He knew it without any doubt in his mind. And so he went to tell his wife that he was going to Honduras, and he was afraid, you know, what she might say, like, are you crazy? But having never been there before, but she said, well, when we married, I said I would go with you wherever you want to go, wherever God leads you, and that's what I'm going to do. And so they took their two young boys, a one-year-old and a three-year-old. They drove to Miami in a Jeep and got on a banana boat and went to Honduras. Not knowing the language, not having any idea where they were going, never had been there before, but he knew without a doubt that that's where God wanted him, and they went. And God used them in mighty ways. That was Terry's mom and dad, and some of you know their story. They've been here before, years and years ago, and told the story over and over again. And so that is to catch you up on Don and Tawana Hawk and where they came, where Terry has come from. At the same time, just about the same time that that farmer went out to shock his corn, another farmer in North Dakota wanted to go out with the daughter of a church there in Bowman, North Dakota, and he went out with her, and she said, well, I'm only going to go to, if you'll go to church with me, then I'll go out with you. And so he went to church, and he came to know the Lord, because he wasn't from a Christian family. And he was saved in my grandpa's church, because my dad. And what he didn't know when he got saved was that my mom had been called to be a missionary when she was 6 years old. She was called to go to Africa. And she never, ever lost that call. And so after they got married and went to Bible college, they ended up in Kenya, East Africa. And I was 2 years old at that time. And so I grew up in Kenya. My mom and dad were missionaries there for 42 years. And so both of us, as missionary kids, just had a heart for missions. I mean, that was just a normal thing for us. That's all we knew. And so when I graduated from a boarding school in Kenya and went to a small Bible college in Iowa. And Terry was there also, and we met. And both missionary kids, we had so much in common. And he was so handsome. That it was just love at first sight, you know, it was just one of those things. And so we got together. Now, we knew that God wanted us to get married, but there was a dilemma that we were in because I was absolutely certain that I was going to Africa as a missionary, and Terry was absolutely certain that he was going to Honduras as a missionary, and that makes for a really bad marriage. And so it was really a difficult situation that we were in because we both loved missions with all our heart and felt God wanted us to go. So a missionary came to our church. And we were in construction, and we were busy in the church and missions and loved what we were doing, but we just had something missing in our hearts. And so a missionary came to our church and shared us with us the need for missionaries and the Native American school that they had, a boarding school for Native American children in Phoenix, Arizona. And it was World Gospel Mission, the same mission organization that we are both with or had been with. And so we decided to quit our jobs and go as volunteers to the American Indian Field. We thought, well, that was somewhere in between Africa and Honduras. So maybe that's where God wanted us to serve. So we were there for a year and loved it, and God used us. And we were dorm parents to junior high boys, and they were something, let me tell you. But God taught us all kinds of things. You know, we went thinking that, well, we're missionary kids. We can do this. But boy, did we have a lot to learn. And God learned, you know, helped us learn a lot during those years. So we thank God for that experience. And after that year, he sent us back to Ohio. And Terry was farming with his uncle, and we started our own construction company and just got really settled in the American way of life in our church and in our home and in construction working. And we just thought, well, maybe God wants us just to be here in the States and support missionaries. Maybe that's what he wants us to do. And then one night in our home church, a spontaneous revival broke out. It used to be the revivals were spontaneous. Now they're kind of on the calendar. You know, we're going to have revival at this time. But at that time, there was nothing on the calendar. And it was a Sunday night, and we just had an amazing service. And the Holy Spirit met with us in a really great way. And so the pastor said, if anybody wants to come back tomorrow night, we're going to have church again. And that went on for 2 full weeks. We had church every single night, and the Lord just was moving in mighty ways. And it was in one of those services that God spoke to my heart. And I knew without any doubt in my mind that he wanted me to go to Honduras. Now, that was huge for me because I felt like I was giving up Africa. But God showed me in a lot of different ways that he wanted me in Honduras. And I thank him for that call on my life because it was then mine. It wasn't my mom and dad's anymore. It was mine. And so in 1982, we went to Honduras, set foot on Honduran soil. And we felt like we were home, but we belonged there and that God had special things planned for us as we worked there. I had to go to language school because, you know, I didn't know Spanish. I could speak Swahili and Kipsugis and Maasai and those languages that I'd learned in Kenya, but that didn't work in Honduras. And Terry knew Spanish, but he didn't bother teaching me any of it. So the only thing I knew was no, because that translates in Spanish, too. It's a Spanish word. So anyway, So I went to language school for 8 hours a day for 3 months, learned Spanish. It was kind of just, it was just a lot. I could dream in beautiful Spanish and wake up to reality. It was like, oh, please, Lord. So anyway, then we went out to El Sembrador where Terry's mom and dad had started a school for underprivileged boys. It was started in 1954 is when the school opened, and was started with 9 students. When we got there in 82, there was 200 students boarding, boys, all boys, because we didn't have enough staff to deal with boys and girls. So we just had boys that were boarding. And it was the boys that were losing their opportunity to go to school because they were staying home to help their mom usually in really difficult home situations. And so Terry's dad saw the need for the boys to get an education. The girls were getting one in public schools, but not the boys. So we had 200 students, and they were from 10 years old to 26 in first grade. And it was because they had lost their chance to go to a school in a public school. And so the school was catching those boys that had lost their opportunity. And then there was a farming operation along beside of it and running along and helping support it. So the kids would come, and most of them couldn't really pay a whole lot. They did pay some. It gave them some dignity, and they didn't feel like they were getting a free ride. They had to work for it. They worked half a day, and they went to school half a day. And that's how they got their education. And God has used that school through the years. And this year in July, they'll be celebrating 65 years of service, and thousands and thousands of young people have gone through there, and it's changed their lives, and it's changed their whole direction and the way they were going. And we have a vision and a goal that it's going to change that country, and right now it's in such so much turmoil. But we pray, and we want you to help us pray that God is going to change that country and those people. And it's going to come through the ones that have learned about the Lord. They've learned Christian values. They've learned how to work, a good work ethic. And they have learned how to be a family, how to raise a family. That's one of the things that Terry and I felt more than anything, that what we did as a family in front of those kids was so important. To see a father that loved their children, to see a father that disciplined their children, to see a father that loved his wife. Those were such important values that we wanted the kids to learn, and to learn how to be good dads, and just to be and good husbands. So that was one of the things that we really felt like God was calling us to do. After 20 years of living at Escuela El Sembrador, we thought we were going to live and die there. We just had such a passion for it. We just loved every bit of it. And it was hard work, a lot of hard work. A lot of worry about where the money was going to come from, but God always provided. And feeding 200 boys is not an easy task, but God always provided. And so we praise him for that. God called us after 20 years of being at El Salvador. He called us into leadership, field leadership in Honduras, which meant we had to leave Escuela El Sembrador and move into the capital city of Tegucigalpa. And that was a huge change because we were used to the country and the farming and the wide open spaces, and then we were behind bars in the city and all the traffic and all the craziness that went on. And I just thought, what am I doing here, God? What are you going to do with me here? I can't even get out my gate, you know? So it was just like God gave us a gift, honestly, when it all came down. We started working with our national church in Honduras, which was started over 100 years ago. And so we started working with the national church, and we were working side by side with boys and young men that we had raised at Escuela El Sembrador. And so God showed us some of the fruits of our labors when sometimes we didn't know if there were any. And so it was just amazing to be able to work beside them, to be one, you know, just right along with them and not be over them anymore as disciplinarians or whatever, but just to work beside them and come alongside of them and love their families and visit their churches. And we just love that. And we thank God for that great opportunity that he gave us. And we were there in the capital city for about 10 years, and then God called us another direction, and I'll let Terry continue the story. It's just been great to be with you this morning.
Well, good morning. It's good to be with you this morning. This year, in my devotional time, and from time to time, I decide to read the Bible clear through in 1 year. And so God has sort of impressed on me again this year to do that. I've done it quite a few times, but it just seems like every time I go through it, just new things seem to come out. And it's really good to read the Bible all in one setting, not all in one day, but it takes me a year to do it, but to go through it and just to see the totality of the scriptures. A lot of times we pick and choose what we want to read and what we want to obey, and we forget about the rest of it. And really, the Bible, for me, is a guide for life. And the Bible has a lot to say about all of life, including what we need to do about government, what we need to do about family, what we need to do about the arts, education, science, communications, economics, and especially the church, how we're to act as a church. And I think sometimes as Christians, we kind of isolate ourselves and think, well, we're just going to sit here and wait till we go to heaven. We don't want to get too involved in other things. And in today's environment, you don't want to talk about government because you don't want to start a big argument. You don't want to talk about all the social issues that are going on just because you don't want to get into it. And but throughout history, Christians thought and acted in ways that influenced the communities and the nations that they lived in. And much of that influence had a positive effect on things like public education, workers' rights, economic development, the concept of the free press, and helped for the to help with the victimized and disfranchised people. And I believe that as a church, we need to be that influence in all those areas of life, not just the church, but in everything that we're involved in. I believe that we as a church need to be that influence, a positive influence on people's lives. And, you know, if the church isn't discipling the nations, what's going to happen is the nations will disciple the church. And I think if you look in a lot of our churches nowadays, you can't really tell the difference between how people outside the church think and how people within the church think. A lot of the things are kind of blurred. And I'm talking about a lot of the social things that are going on. When we talk about immigration, we talk about the environment, and we're all kind of afraid to talk about those things. But if we don't talk about them, and if we don't share our influence, what the Bible says, and learn those principles from the Bible, how is our culture going to be influenced if we're not the ones doing it? And so I think it's very important that we do it. I believe we have a story that can transform people's lives, and the Bible gives us a set of principles by which to live, and that's one of the things that you know, as I've matured in my Christian walk, that's one of the things that I've developed. I think I know my dad, when he went to the mission field, they didn't have any support from any mission organization because he was just a farmer, and they said, no, you don't qualify to be a missionary, I guess. And so he went on his own. He felt God calling him there. And then eventually, after his money ran out and they saw that he was doing something special there in Honduras with the young people, he was allowed to come back home, raise the support so that they could continue serving in Honduras. But that was one of the things that he started out with, is sharing the gospel in a holistic way. Not just out church planting, not just out evangelizing, although those are very important things and need to be done. But then there's a whole lot of other areas within life that needs to be lived out in a Christian way. And so I think that they were a very good model of how to live a life and live it within God's kingdom. And so your pastor asked if World Gospel Mission concentrated on one thing, in one area. You know, there's a lot of organizations that just work with children, or they work with Bible translation. That's their main focus. Well, with World Gospel Mission, we don't have any one main focus other than to see people's lives transformed for the Lord. And that could be in quite a few different areas. And so wherever the need is, that's where we want to be able to minister. And so we'll have schools, we have hospitals, we have the farming operation. We do a lot of church planting. We do a lot of evangelism. But we do all these other things along with that. And so that's what I really like about World Gospel Mission, is that it gives us that opportunity to be able to minister in a lot of different ways. And so that's what we're doing now, as what Our title is Regional Director for the Americas, which includes South America, Central America, and North America, which within North America is Mexico. And so under our charge is about 100 missionaries, which we help come alongside, help encourage, help with strategic planning, look for new places to minister. And then also while we're here back home, when we're not out traveling, which is most of the time, we're involved in a lot of training with new missionaries that are coming on this week at the Thursday and Friday. We have 8 new candidates coming on, and we interview them, see how they're how compatible they are with World Gospel Mission and with what we do as an organization. And then after that, then there's a training process and those kind of things that go along with it. And so that's basically what our ministry mostly is now. I would rather be out on a tractor someplace, but this is what God has for us. And, you know, I don't think my life or our life is any different than anybody else's life. I think God has called us and has privileged us with getting paid for what we do, because we do raise our support and we do this, what they call full-time service. But really, it's not any different than what God has called each one of us to do, and that is to be that influence to the people that we come in contact every day, whether you're a school teacher, whether you're in a factory, or whatever you're doing. You need to do it to the best of your ability and as a reflection of God's in your life. And, you know, I tell people when I'm out mowing the yard, I like to keep the lines as straight as I can, because to me, work is worship. And whatever I do it to the best of my ability. And the story's told of a carpenter back in the 200 or 300 years ago. The carpenter did everything by hand, and when they would make a piece of furniture, the front of it was just really well done. But if you turned that piece of furniture around to the back side was also just as well done as what the front side was. And someone asked, well, why do you do that? Nobody sees the back of it. He says, no, but God does. And everything that I do as if though God was watching me. And so that's how I like to do ministry and how I go about my life. Everything I do, whether I'm out planting corn, I like those rows as straight as possible, because I know that that's God would be pleased with that. Not that the corn won't grow if it's crooked, but I like to do to the best of my ability whatever God has given me to do. And so that's sort of how we go about doing our ministry. And when we're traveling and working with our missionaries, we try to do the best that we can in whatever we do. So we'd appreciate your prayers as we continue on. We are still missionaries, even though our roles have changed. We still are missionaries, and we still do have to raise our support. And so we really appreciate this church who has stood by us from the very beginning. I think you all are one of the most faithful supporters that we have. Every month we know that the money that you send in for our ministry is going to be there, and so we appreciate that, and we thank you very much for that. Okay, is there any questions that anybody has? I know we went through this pretty quickly, but if you do have some questions, I'll be happy to answer anything you might have.
Do the Hondurans speak Spanish?
Yes, it's all Spanish. There is Portuguese spoken down in Brazil, but everything else is Spanish. Yeah, so you do have to know Spanish if you're if you want to communicate. But the people are very friendly. Most Hispanics are very friendly, and you can do a lot of this kind of talking and get along pretty good. Yes. They're very open to it. Of course, most of Latin America is Catholic, but it's a different. It's a Catholic mixed in with a lot of other stuff. When my parents first went to Honduras, it was about 5% evangelical. The rest was Catholic. Now they say it's about 50% evangelical, and so the gospel has made inroads. The problem is, as I was talking about earlier, I think we were really good, and when I talk about we, I'm talking about missions in general. We aren't the only missionaries in Honduras. There was a lot of other groups there, and they've done a very good job. Our organization planted a church, and now we have over 250 churches throughout Honduras. And so we did a very good job of planting churches. We did a very good job of evangelizing. And so the question is, back when it was 5%, back in the early 40s, there was very little crime and corruption during that time. Now Honduras, now that it's about 50% reached country, it's the number one country in the world as far as homicide rates and the corruption and everything that goes along with it. And that's why so many people are wanting to are coming here from those countries. And so you say, well, what's the deal there? I thought the gospel was supposed to transform people's lives. And I believe it does. And I believe people's lives are transformed. But as I said, there's more than just church planting and evangelism. People need to know how to live their lives in order and be obedient to what the gospel says. And if they aren't being discipled in that, then their lives are saved and ready to go to heaven, but if they don't have somebody to help disciple them and help bring them along to not only transform their hearts but also transform the way they think, we're going to have the situation that we have in Honduras. So that's why we're so adamant about preaching the whole gospel and not just part of it. So, okay, I want to, yeah.
What is the most encouraging thing about your ministry? If you don't mind getting personal, what's the most discouraging thing about your ministry?
Well, I think the most encouraging thing is that as we travel and as we're missionaries, we get to see the results, even though we're not directly on the front lines like we used to be and could deal directly with people. Now we're working more with the missionaries that deal directly with the people, and to be able to see the effect of their ministries, and hopefully our ministry as we work with the missionaries to help encourage them. And so as we travel, that's one of the most encouraging things. The most discouraging thing is that we're getting older and our time is getting close to as far as being fully active like we are now. I hope never to retire, but it won't be in the same capacity that we are now. So, but yeah, that would be... Yeah, our problem is every time we sit in church and a missionary comes to speak, we say, "Man, I could do that. Let's let's start over." But that just doesn't happen. So, okay, we'd like to invite you to come. We can't say come to Honduras because that's still our first love as far as where we were. Someone said, "Well, how do you get to Honduras?" And I said, "Well, if you leave here, you would drive down to Indianapolis, then you go straight to McAllen, then you cross the border in Mexico, go to Saltillo, go to Veracruz, go to Tampico, go through Mexico City, then to Tapachula, then you take a left there, and take a left there, got my lefts mixed up here, and go to Guatemala City, and then cross the border into Salvador, San Salvador, and then on into Honduras, and go to Tegucigalpa, then Catacamas, and then you'll be at El Escuela and Sembrador. So now you know how to get there. Someone said that that's what my dad did every time, so I thought I wouldn't disappoint him, and I'd tell him how to get to Honduras again. So now you know how to get there. Okay, appreciate the opportunity that you've given us to share, and we'll be out back there. If you have any other questions that you might have, we'll be happy to answer those. But again, I just want to tell you how much we appreciate you all, appreciate your prayers, and appreciate your financial support. And hopefully it won't be another 15 years before we get back to see you all here. So thank you.